Hello, this is Nicole Todd from Santa Cruz Cider Company in Santa Cruz, California, and you are listening to Cider Chat.
Episode number 60. Welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Aria Wincaller, and I am your Cider MC on this weekly podcast where we speak with cider makers, enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And this week, we are in the surfing community of Santa Cruz, California, and chatting with Nicole Todd of Santa Cruz Cider Company. There'll be more on that chat in a moment. A big tip of the glass to Jeff from Ciderville, who is sharing with us a recipe finder link online where you can make recipes that include cider, such as chicken and cider. And Jeff has sent me photos of every single recipe that he's made so far. Now, with this recipe finder, you are integrating cider into the food that you're cooking. And what he said about the chicken and cider recipe, it was so good that his wife, Lynn, wanted to get every drop on the plate. Don't we know how that goes, right? And I just enjoy the way he's been doing this. The photos are delightful. He shows that he was trying a little bit of Eric Bordelais while he was cooking the cider and chicken. And then he used his own cider, which was 10 ounces of his dry Malice Bacata and Northern Spy cider blend. He served it with some mashed potatoes, it looks like, and looks like maybe little slices of some pears. I'm not sure, but it looked really, really nice. And then he also has made what is called onion cider and Stilton soup. And the photos of that, it's a beautiful presentation. Again, Jeff, you must be a professional cook. At least it looks pretty professional to me. And isn't Lynn a lucky woman? The soup itself is a creamy, kind of like a peach color. And then you see the Stilton cheese, which is like a blue cheese type of variety, if you're not aware of it, right in the middle. He says that it is tangy and satisfying, but not too heavy, and that it would serve as a perfect starter course for a holiday meal. I'm having difficulty talking right now because my mouth is watering while I'm looking at all these photos. And this just gets us in the groove, which is really important to cider. Oftentimes when we are sharing cider and educating people about cider, we're doing it purely by just pouring it in the glass and passing it to the person. And that only brings us half the way there on the immense joy that cider can bring to the palate. It's not like I ever turned down a glass of cider, but I think it's time we start upping the game like Jeff is doing and really enjoying the bounty that cider does both within recipes for cooking and accompanying a meal. Certainly, the United States Association of Cider Makers really pushed that whole trend for this Thanksgiving season. But the truth be known, cider is a year-round drink, and it's so amenable to both recipes and just sharing as that perfect drink to have along with any meal or an appetizer. So thank you so much, Jeff. I'll be posting these photos on the Facebook page for Cider Chat and also to the show notes for this episode, number 60. Are you an online shopper? Well, Cider Chat is a member of the Amazon Affiliate Program, which means by entering Amazon via the Cider Chat resource page, any and all purchases that you make online at Amazon provides Cider Chat with a small kickback. Please take that extra 1 minute to think about Cider Chat next time you go online to make your Amazon purchase and help keep this chat thriving. Go to ciderchat.com/resource and click the Amazon link today. Regular listeners of Cider Chat will know that last week I headed out to California And while there, I was able to visit two cideries. One will be the main chat for this week's episode, and that's with Nicole Todd of Santa Cruz Cider Company. But I also happened to have a bit of a chat with Matthew Austin of a new cidery startup in San Diego, California. Right now, there are no cideries in San Diego, which is a crying shame when you think of all the craft beer enthusiasts just waiting for the next best thing to come along. So this week, we're going to add to the queue a little bit of a mini chat with Matthew Austin of Bivouac Cidery to give you an idea of what to expect in 2017 when you next land at the San Diego International Airport. So I'm meeting up with Matthew Austin down at Mike Hess's R&D Center where he started his nanobrewery. And if you don't know, Mike Hess will be a link in the show notes. He is like the blogger for the West Coast nano movement. It's a nanobrewery, small batch beers. And now this location is going to be his R&D Center. And Matt is able to store these beautiful stainless, cylinder cider tanks, essentially, and getting set up for the start of Bivouac. So we're going to have a little bit of a chat on Bivouac Cider and what it's doing down here in San Diego.
Hi, this is Matthew Austin from Bivouac Cider Works in San Diego, California, and you are listening to Cider Chat. What I'm really excited about in cider is what's coming next. You know, we can sort of take advantage of the sour thing in beer, and we can take advantage of the interest in craft beverage and the interest in gluten-free cider and use that as the entry point to introduce consumers. But what's the next thing? Mm-hmm. What is the voice that American cider makers or West Coast cider makers or San Diego cider makers are going to find within their product? What are we going to do that we're going to discover?
That's part of the cusp that we're all on right now. And the door's wide open.
Right.
The apple says, come on and play, right?
Exactly.
So in terms of come on and play and your scene, you are not just going to be a tasting room. You're going to be like a full service, if I'm correct on this, like a that like brew pub style.
Right. So we have a tap room, and we're going to have a full service restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
We have a head chef named Scott Worm, and he is right now running one of the largest catering companies in Southern California.
Wow.
They did, I think, 50,000 people last month, and he is actually the brother of my main business partner, Laura Worm.
Okay.
He's got some fantastic ideas about how to pair these flavors that we're going to be creating on the cider side with the food scene here in San Diego, and fusing very good pairing menus. We're going to be doing tasting parties and pairing menus and specialty events.
Nice.
And so I'm hoping people are equally as excited about the food coming out of our kitchen on site in our tap room as the cider. We really, after going to Europe so much and experiencing the sort of collaboration between cider and food, wine and food, I really didn't want to offer a tasting room that didn't have food. It is a collaborative presentation between food and drink, and people are satiated beyond belief when you can give them both of those things and have it be a harmonious relationship. So
absolutely, cider just is meant to be
consumed, I believe, food.
Absolutely.
You know, just and, opens it up.
And it is, you know, in my opinion, even better suited for food than wine is. And it's definitely better suited than beer in a lot of ways with a lot of foods, but there's just so many options on how you can create.
Drink it and yeah. create food with yeah. it. Yes, it's yeah, just, integrate it into the recipe.
Great. So,
yeah, oh, that'll be
and
exciting.
I think that's one of the reasons we're seeing a big pickup in cider is because people are realizing how valuable that combination is and how much it can up your experience mm-hmm. of your food. So.
Good. Well, we'll be looking forward to seeing the menu online or something. Yeah. What do you have going on there? We'll be serving flights.
We'll be serving flights. We'll okay. be, at any one time, we're going to have about 10 ciders of our own.
Okay.
And then a couple guest ciders and a couple guest beers in our tap room.
Great.
We want to...
Maybe wine, too?
Maybe wine.
Wine? Okay.
We'll definitely have a couple of wines.
And where are you... Where's this going to be located in terms of... If people are flying into the San Diego airport, how... Can they get like an Uber?
Oh, yeah. So,
like how close?
If you were at the airport, it's a 10-minute Uber ride. We're right in the heart of North Park, which mm-hmm. also has a ton of breweries, mm-hmm. restaurants. It's a really growing scene there, and it's an exciting place to be a part mm-hmm. of. And that community is awesome and very supportive of mm-hmm. local business and very supportive of the craft beverage industry. And we really couldn't ask for a better home.
Perfect location.
It's going to be great.
So you'll have flights. You will have be pouring it on tap and serving pint glasses.
Serving pint glasses. Okay. We'll have
and
some
brewery
ciders.
Style, right?
Yeah. Yep. We'll have some ciders by the bottle. We'll be making some champagne styles.
So 750 mil.
Yep, 750
bottles.
Mil
okay. corked.
Bottles corked and okay. ready to go.
Wow.
And nice and dry.
Are you going to be using somebody's bottling line, or are you?
We have our own
wow.
equipment coming in specifically.
Well,
for
you're just going full steam into
yeah,
this.
Yeah, 750 right. milliliters. So
we like that kind of cider attitude.
Yeah.
No looking back.
No looking back.
Now you have a Kickstarter.
We do. So we're going to be launching our Kickstarter in about a week and a half, we'll say, from today, and that'll be going through January.
Through the month of January.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good to know.
And so we're going to be using that to fund an additional tank purchase and our delivery vehicle for spreading our cider throughout San Diego. So
great.
It is an integral part of getting our business going here and getting up and running and
getting the buzz going.
Spreading the
yeah.
love in
yeah.
San Diego.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, I know that you're on Facebook. You have Twitter.
We got Twitter. We got Facebook.
Yeah,
we got Instagram.
Social media. Okay.
We're
well,
trying to stay on it all.
And then make cider.
And then make cider
oh,
as well.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I wish you the best of luck. I can't wait to, like, return back to California, come down and see that menu. You know, I'll be kind of salivating from a distance, I'm sure. And that's what I'm really excited about is that fusion of food and cider. So the fact that you're not just doing a tasting room and taking that next step, I think that's really timely in the world of cider to have those options so that people really see how a perfect marriage
right.
it is in that way. Cheers and best of luck.
Thank you.
I am just so excited about that cidery bivouac and what is happening up and down the coast. Which brings us to our main chat for this week. We're going to be speaking to Nicole Todd. But before we go there, I just want to mention that Adam, who reached out to me via the Cider Chat Facebook page, was kind of asking exactly for this type of chat. Adam, you said that you're out in Auckland in New Zealand and you're working at the Omaha Bay Vineyard now, but you have a real passion for making cider. And you wanted some more tips for improving your cider. Well, I think as Nicole and I get into this chat and do a little bit of an on-tape tasting, you'll get a sense for what I look at and how I see some of the cultures of what's happening in whether you're using a demijohn, but in this case, a barrel. So I hope it helps you improve your cider making and just our cider knowledge all around. Because it's about having these conversations that I don't go in as an expert. It's just having a conversation that we all grow together. So I'm so excited to share with you this lovely cidery in the city that sits on the northern shore of Monterey Bay, and where the California gray whales will come out to play. Well, let's all grab a glass and join a chat as we meet Nicole Todd of Santa Cruz Cider Company in California.
Is that Santa Cruz Cider Company?
There is. Hi.
Hi.
I'm Felix.
Hi, Felix. Rhea Wincaller.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, you too. Yabba dabba doo. I saw the press here. I was like,
yeah,
okay.
We put that out there just for that reason.
Nicole?
Oh, and yeah.
Hi.
Nice to officially meet you.
Yes. Wonderful.
Yeah. Welcome. This is our...
I love it.
Our 800 square feet.
800 square feet.
Yeah.
I see those little casks in the back. I love it.
Yeah, we've got some more barrels tucked in.
Nice.
But yeah, I was just pulling some samples so we can try a couple things.
Good, efficient, you know, use of space.
Yes.
Is this your main press here?
No, that was my first press. And we always start and end the season with a wood press just for novelty's sake.
That is so cute.
Yeah.
So it's HR. What does that mean?
It's Happy Valley Ranch. They're the folks that make it.
Happy Valley?
Mm-hmm.
Happy Valley Ranch. It's got like this brand. It's like
exactly. They're in Kansas.
Yeah, it's like a little double press that you have the grinder there with the hand wheel kind of moving around and little wooden baskets.
Yeah.
I like the little wheels.
Yeah.
Sweet.
It was a gift from Santa Cruz Mountain Brewery.
Oh.
I used to work there and was making beer when I found out I was gluten sensitive.
Oh my gosh,
so
no
I started
kidding.
Making cider because I just love fermentation. So they gifted this to me as I kind of left and started my cider journey.
Isn't that perfect?
Yeah.
But you also worked at the tasting room? Or
I still work
still
at Bonnie Doon for my day job and Equinox Champagne House.
Wow. Burning the candle from both ends,
yeah,
right?
We're not really paying ourselves here yet. So.
Yeah, well, it's a big commitment doing all this for sure.
It is, yeah.
I love it. I saw the tanks. I was checking out the Facebook page and looking around.
Yeah.
And
cool. So, yeah, I started off in wine. I'm kind of approaching it from more of a brewer's standpoint.
Yeah.
So that's why we're just fermenting in these, and then we have our one bright tank. So we can force carbonate. And we do have some stuff. We're doing traditional method champenois, but that's sitting at the champagne house on the lees right now.
Is this your first year doing that?
Mm-hmm. It's our first year. We did an 1,100-bottle experiment, so... Hoping it's going to work out.
Okay. And when are you going to be going to the second stage of actually...
riddling
and all that?
It's been 3 months. I think we're going to test a couple next month and see where it's at.
Okay.
I think we're going to leave at least half of it on the lees for 6 months and disgorge it 6 months.
Wow.
And maybe leave the other half for a year to see how that improves it.
Oh, wow. That's really exciting. I walked into this giant, what is this, like a big giant door,
a
garage
warehouse store. Yeah.
Warehouse store, right. And we're in a room that is the height of the ceilings, we're guesstimating at 20 feet. And then the width is about 15 feet across.
It's 20 feet.
Mm-hmm.
40. Yeah.
And you have this really efficient space. It looks like you have an office upstairs.
Yes.
Okay. What was this room originally?
Originally, the whole building was for Joe Aliberti Construction.
Oh, okay.
And so he built it. When he closed his business, he remodeled it to be individual bay doors that he could rent out for space. So we have a woodworking shop next door, a lamp-making shop on the other side, and a brewery going in the front.
Wow. Okay. Well, a brewery and a cidery right next door to each other.
Yeah.
Copacetic. Okay, and then you have these like racks here. I'll get some photos of it where you have these vessels. We call these the IBC vessels, and they're plastic. If you haven't ever seen these before, kind of in like their own cage because they're plastic, you know, they will flex and stuff, and so it's a nice way to move them. And this is where you're storing your blends of your cider in the making, right?
Yes, single varietals and some blends.
Okay. And then across is like stairs going up to the office. It looks like you could even put up more racking if you need to. Of course, we're in San Santa Cruz, so we see some skateboards on the wall, some bike fenders, and, you know, it just, the whole area, this whole area that you're in, just the bakery and the brewery and the wineries all in this charcuterie. Mm-hmm. It's just such a happening place. And then if you almost could, if you had a really good arm, well, maybe, I don't know, better than that, but it's like if you're walking from here down to the ocean, it would take you probably...
It's like 10-15 minute walk.
10 minutes, yeah. Yeah, you could kind of see it from the distance.
I did meet you in Portland last year.
During the Palm Boots meeting.
Yeah,
yes,
Palm Boots.
Of course,
yes.
Yeah.
And you were with your sister.
Yes, exactly. Great.
Is she still a part of Santa Cruz Cider Company?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what is her name?
And her name is Natalie Henze.
Natalie Henze, okay. Mm-hmm. What I recall of speaking to you before is you're really doing this a very organic way.
Exactly.
And that was partially because you were doing some, picking the apples yourself and doing it all like heavy, heavy labor in many ways, right?
Yeah, it's important to us to know where our apples come from, mm-hmm. and, you know, meet the trees that they're growing mm-hmm. on and mm-hmm. be in all parts of the business.
Okay, all right. So I want to hear about that. Why don't we go sit down and I can put this down here. So we're going to walk into the back room. We're walking by a bright beer tank. It's a 10-barrel beer tank that you would see typically in a brewery. And you're using that for conditioning, Nicole? Is that?
For carbonating.
Carbonating, okay. Yeah, and she has a nice little setup. This is like the, oh, look at all those carboys underneath. We're seeing some 5-gallon and some 3-gallon carboys that are, well, is this your, like, testing area?
Exactly. Most of them are the last of the season, Black Twig, Arkansas Black, a few other things. There's some Howard Pippin in there, which is a big apple in this area. And, some of it is stuff aging from last year, but I am doing some terroir studies from the two orchards we pull from, so... Okay. Pippin's from both, Gravenstein from both. And then it's also our experimentals. You know, I have a nettle ginger and a lavender cider and some other fun flavors that we like to play with.
So Arkansas Black, that's a single variety right there.
All we got this year. It was 5 gallons.
How old of a tree were you pulling that off of? Do you know?
That one was probably in its 30s or 40s. It was in the back corner of the property, totally forgotten about with all the Red Delicious that we didn't pick this year.
No kidding. And what Bonnie Doon Pippins. Is that just because that's where you
that's
got
where
it up
them.
In?
Yep.
Right.
So last year we picked Pippins from 3 locations. And so, that was kind of one of our test batches.
And for folks who are listening, Bonnie Doon is just to the north, up off of like Highway 1, north of Santa Cruz. And beautiful kind of hilly town in, I guess like a hill town, right?
Mm-hmm.
In many ways,
just a little mountain community.
Lots of redwood trees and all that.
This region of California is rich with apple-growing history. Now, if you look at Monterey Bay, you have Santa Cruz to the north, and about an hour to the south, you'll find the city of Monterey. In the middle is Moss Landing, and I do recommend checking out the kayak shop, Kayak Connection, and taking a tour up Elkhorn Slough, which is renowned for bird watching and animal watching too, such as sea otters, seals, and so much more. If you go a little bit inland, you'll find the city of Watsonville. This is what is called Pajaro Valley. And in 1909, this region was producing and shipping 2.5 million boxes of apples. And while the rest of the U.S. was really thick in the red apple market, well, this region decided instead to concentrate on the golden varieties, such as Bellflower, Newtown Pippin, and Gravenstein. Next, Natalie and I sit down for a tasting.
We started playing with cider probably 2010 when I found out I was gluten sensitive and working for the local brewery. And so I wanted to start making cider for the brewery, and we found out it was a winemaker's license. So that's when my sister and I kind of branched off from there and got the winemaker's license and this space about 2 years ago. Before that, we were contract fermenting at Equinox Champagne Cellars just across the street. Wow. And fermenting there, we had our distributor's license. We were selling it out of there.
Wow.
And then we got this space, took a year to get our federal permit for the TTB to say, okay. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we're still super small. We try and press most of our apples ourselves. And so we're doing really small batches.
What are you using as a press? Because I know you're not using that one that's out there. Because
no.
I saw something like 10 tons of apples or something like that.
There's 10 tons of Gravenstein this year alone.
Yeah.
So we do have just one little basket press. It's a bladder press.
Wow. Okay.
You know, if you put your arms in a circle, it's about that size. So we get 8 to 11 gallons per press. And we just have one of the big, you know, Italian crushers.
Wow.
The three of us as a family can press 200 gallons in a day if it's a long day. So that's what we're doing from, you know, end of July till end of October is in the orchard almost every day picking and pressing and picking
so
and
So you're
pressing.
Able to pick the apples in July. What are some of the apples that you'd be getting in July around
In
here?
July is just Gravenstein.
Okay. So a lot of folks in think about this region of like really like apple trees growing in the Santa Cruz Hills, but I know Watsonville is like a huge area for growing apples, like really huge.
Yeah, so Watsonville used to be called Apple City.
Mm-hmm.
And a big area next to that is Corralitos, and it's still heavily planted with apples.
And that's where your orchard is.
Exactly.
So let's talk about that orchard. Is that orchard a family orchard?
So it is not. The orchard that we got our start with is in Watsonville. It's super small. It's 2 acres. It was for sale in 2011. My husband and I looked to buy it and decided we didn't like the house enough. So we passed, but nobody was living there. And it was November and all the apples were on the ground. So we just backed our truck in and helped ourselves. And so that was one of our first big batches of cider. It was these strumped apples.
Wow.
We learned that strumping is the English word for stealing apples. So we went and strumped again the next week and had quite a bit of cider for that year. Our friend Dave ended up buying the same piece of property. So when we asked him what he was going to do with the apples, and he said, you can have them, that's really what got Santa Cruz Cider Company its start, was Dave saying, here's 2 acres of apples for you to play with. And from there, we pulled from other orchards
as
well.
Do you know about the origins of that particular orchard? Because that's where the Arkansas Black is?
No, so that's the current orchard that we're living on.
Okay.
Is where the Arkansas Black is.
So that first orchard that Dave now owns, mm-hmm. is that a diversified orchard or is that Gravenstein
primarily?
It's
about 17 Gravenstein trees.
Okay.
And maybe 30 Newtown Pippin and a lot of Red Delicious, but some Pinova, Golden Bellflower, one crab apple, which is pretty delicious.
And they're about 30 years old or so?
They're like 30 to 100.
30 to 100?
Yeah.
Wow, that's fantastic.
So just in the last 2 years, we've planted baby trees, wine sap, Beldebascoop, Howard Pippin, and some Wixen crab.
Wow.
To kind of start getting some cider varieties in there.
Yeah, yeah. And are the trees that are the original trees, are they standard size or dwarf?
Yeah, everything standard.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And did either of you or any of you have like orchard care? Is that like
no orchard experience at all? Yeah, no, I've been fermenting for about 11 years, but no orchard experience. And the more we get into it, the more I realize that's where I want to be, is with the trees.
Yeah.
So I've kind of taken on more of that part of the business and the cider making. My sister does the paperwork and keeps us legal and bills paid.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah.
And what kind of ladders are you using?
The standard, the 3-foot, you know.
Aluminum?
Aluminum, yep.
Okay.
Yeah, there are a couple of wooden ones out there that we just don't trust, so we bought some new aluminum ones.
It's a lot of work picking the apples and going all the way through, but
especially on the standard size trees.
Yeah, those are tall trees, and there's a lot to be said for that.
Yeah.
So you have that orchard, and then now you're...
And then just last year in 2015, someone called us up in July and said, would you be interested in some Gravensteins? We have... they have about 150 tons of fruit on this property, and they usually sell the Martinellis because there's a lot of Galas and Fujis. But Martinellis doesn't buy Gravenstein. So they were looking at local cideries to buy Gravenstein, and so that's how we met Phil and Carell Reeder, who own this property. her family has owned it since 1880. Wow. So dad just passed down, you know, some of the trees are, again, 100 plus years old. Some of them are new.
Is that in the same area, south of here?
Yeah, so this is like Corralitos. This is like between Aptos and Watsonville.
Oh. So what is the, we're like kind of like at sea level, right? Mm-hmm. So what is the zone for, again, because just to wrap people's minds around it, you know, being a coastal cidery, mm-hmm, and coastal orchards, what is the elevation where those orchards are?
It's pretty darn close to sea level.
So yeah, how is it that works for apple trees then? Because I'm thinking that it just needs a little bit more cooler weather to go through it.
So both of these orchards are in a little bit of a valley, and so it does stay a little bit cooler.
Okay.
The Pleasant Valley Orchard in Corralitos is kind of just the beginning of the Corralitos Banana Belt, or Green Belt in a way. So there is some fog and some mist, but not as much as Aptos. Mm. And it gets a little bit more sun than Santa Cruz even sometimes.
Oh, wow. So that's hard to believe.
Yeah.
Because it's always sunny in Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
Except when the fog rolls in.
Except in the summer, yeah.
The fog rolls in the morning, and it takes a couple hours. And I mean, people don't expect that. They think they're in California, but the fog really rolls in, and it takes probably sometimes midday for that to kind of clear up.
Yeah.
No doubt. So that orchard has how many trees?
So what's the size? It's several hundred, if not a couple thousand trees.
So what's this acreage?
It's about 12 acres of apples, 17 acre property.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
How exciting. And how much pruning and tender loving care had to go into it initially?
Yeah, and so both orchards are forgotten orchards, so we're still bringing them both back to health. Dave's, we've worked on for about 4 years now, and so we've gotten to prune all of his trees at least once. Mm-hmm. And we don't get to all of them every year, but the Red Delicious we kind of could care less about anyway, so we're get to those last.
Well, have you been watching YouTube videos on how to prune?
I should.
How are you doing that?
Mostly just talking to people, that have done it before.
Yeah.
The people that have either taken workshops and then just show me. But, as long as you get that nice goblet shape and everything's kind of growing out and up, that's the idea.
That's the idea.
It doesn't seem too hard from there.
Now, do you know what an apple pretzel is on a tree?
I don't.
They're pretty cool. And this is what pruners do, and it'll also provide more growth on the tree, and I think provide bomber handholds, a rock climbing term, right? As you're going, because it's where the pruner goes up and kind of like wraps the tree around, actually takes like one of the shoots, and if it's in the right, it has to be the right shoot, right? And we're talking about
little suckers
that go up, right, and kind of wrap it around so it makes like a donut. And so over time, I mean, I've been in orchards kind of climbing in the tree where over time, I mean, it's like a thick handle that you could grab into, and what it does is it provides additional places for the new growth to come up, especially in an old orchard. And so I don't know if other folks know this term, but it's something that this gentleman, Brad, that I'll probably have on the show eventually, and he's brought some many old orchards back, and he calls them apple pretzels. Because they kind of look like that, in a design, and like especially when they're young, the suckers are just kind of wrapped around and look kind of pretzely. But over time, it really fuses in. And when you're way up there high in a pretty big standard tree, I'm able to just kind of hold on to it, and steady myself up in the height, which I kind of like because I get a little vertigo sometimes when I'm high, even though I used to rock climb.
Yeah.
So that's something to think about.
I have a photo.
I think of one that might be able to post or send to you to.
That would be great.
To look at. Pretty cool stuff.
Because we are very hands-on at both orchards, so we're able to kind of implement new things, get them to plant some cider varieties.
Yeah, it takes it beyond just looking at the tree as a crown.
Yep.
Or that classic style, but really instituting some things inside for the tree. I kind of like that kind of artwork with the tree too.
Yeah.
So, in many ways, you're an orchard-based cidery because you are right there from July all the way out, holding the apple, noticing the ripeness, tasting it, and going from there. So your pressing cycle is based upon what's going on with the apple versus what's going on with your work. Although you all kind of work outside of the cidery. This isn't, as you said, it's not.
We do. Yeah, we all have day jobs. Still.
Yeah, yeah. So how does that work? You know, for folks who are listening in Ciderville and thinking, you know, that sounds like exactly like I want to do. What has worked well for you in that?
Yeah, well, definitely.
Balance?
You know, then when the trees tell us that they're ready, it's kind of hard. It's go time. So
yeah.
Luckily at our other jobs, we can cut back hours there a little bit during mm-hmm. harvest and then mm-hmm. pick up a little bit more come, you know, January, February. The Champagne House kind of...
Oh, well, hang on a second, though. January, February, because that's when you're in the orchard. I'm thinking of like from July through
right, and so after that time.
Okay, so when's your most busiest time then here?
Our busiest time is definitely September, October.
Okay,
yeah.
So that's a time that's really go time.
It's go, yeah. There are no days off.
Right.
You're
okay.
Working, you know, two or three jobs in one day.
Yeah.
You go and you know pick for the hour before you have to go to work, and you pick until
uh-huh.
it gets dark.
Do you get up in the morning and do particular stretches because you know, like,
yes.
holy smokes, you're going to be like up in the tree that day?
Absolutely. And personally, every day I do a little bit of yoga and you know some sit ups and stuff to keep your core strength.
I know. Yeah. If you don't do that, I mean, you're not going to last up
it's
in a tree.
Back breaking work carrying these apples around, and we don't have a whole lot of tractors or ways to move these apples on all the property. So
what are you doing? Bring up a truck?
You're huffing bags to the end of the row, or we do pull our little Toyota truck in
okay.
and fill that up and then unload it at the front where the press is.
Yeah, because folks don't think about it. It feels like this very romantic concept to be picking out in the orchard, but like one tree can really, I mean, what do you find? Like one tree takes...
Well, we found one tree last year took us 10 hours to harvest.
And why is that?
Was just a huge tree. It was standard rootstock, so it was all the way up and just bumping the ladder around, picking the ones up off the ground that are good. So we actually counted the hours on that one.
That seems like a lot of time for one tree.
It was.
I bet your learning curve is like increasing too as you're going on, right?
You can just forget those few and not spend the extra time on.
That's hard. The economics of scale. I'm wondering about that too. Just doing that in this region. I mean, it's hard enough to even to like live in Santa Cruz, and anywhere on the coast in California. It's a really expensive area.
It is.
Having lived here myself, of course, I hitchhiked in across country and landed in Santa Cruz. Like probably too many people. But you know, how do you do that to sustain yourself? And is it about doing like small, like a boutique cidery? Is that the way to go? Or
well, that's kind of where we're still identifying ourselves right now. We have a lot of small batch stuff that is boutique, but we also have just a regular dry cider that we're trying to make a major brand of, you know, and get it in all the stores and restaurants. So we're trying to find that fine line. Do we have, you know, a cider club for just our small batch stuff, maybe? And just, you know, get the small stuff out that way and just have the dry cider out to the public. We're still kind of playing with that and identifying ourselves where we're going to fit in the market.
Yeah. And I see these giant barrels back here, too. Well, not giant. I shouldn't...
Yeah.
Giant women, or not necessarily in Spain, but that's a 50-gallon barrels up there. There's four. It's a double stack, so two and two. What are you doing with barrels?
We are barrel aging and barrel fermenting cider. And so I did pull some samples so we can try the difference between them.
Oh, yeah. Great.
The Gravenstein apple is beautiful, and I love it, but it doesn't have a lot of body.
Mm.
So by putting it in these used red wine barrels, it gives it a little bit of tannin and body and just makes it a nicely balanced cider without having to add anything.
So are you being really specific on what kind of barrels that you're using?
No, we just kind of talk to local winemakers where we like their wine. You know, and get their barrels. If there's a little bit of white wine left in there, that's fine with me. I do have one port barrel that we're bringing in, and then we're looking to get a local whiskey or gin barrel from the local distillery.
Nice. Very nice.
Yeah.
Great.
But I really think that the barrel adds so much body and flavor to the cider that I wouldn't mind moving more towards a barrel fermented cidery and away from the IBC totes.
And what have you found with barrel aging cider at this point? Because it's really, you know, that is a skill, knowing when to pull it off the barrel.
It is. So I wouldn't say that I have those skills, but we taste it regularly, and when we think it gets to a good point, we rack it into the bright tank and put it in kegs.
Yeah, because even when it's bottled, it's still kind of really conditioning into that oak that's been there. So it's a skill that's a good skill to work towards.
Yes, definitely.
Great. Well, why don't we go to some of these little tastes you have? And I love, let's see, Nicole's pouring this into these beautiful, like, glasses, little tasting glasses. This is the Barrel Age Gravestein, mm-hmm. and it's just a very light amber color.
Mm-hmm.
And very clear. Are you doing any filtration at all?
No filtering. This is okay. This was put in the barrel probably 3 months ago.
Mm.
So we fermented it in late July, early August.
Was it racked off of that initial fermentation?
Yes. Yeah. So we don't do any filtering, but we do, I wouldn't say frequent racking, but everything gets racked anywhere between 3 to 5 times before it gets packaged.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, okay, let's try that.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Nice, really nice finish on the apple.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's almost kind of like that, it's almost like the perfume of the apple is like coming back. It really mm-hmm. surprised me at the end.
Yeah.
Wow.
So this has really changed, since we put it in there. The bright acidity is still there.
Mm-hmm.
But as I mentioned, the body has really come out and developed a bigger body.
Yeah. And how long would you say that this was in the barrel?
I would say about 3 months.
3 months.
3.5 by now, yeah.
3.5, yeah. And was that just pulled off, like, off the barrel?
Yeah.
Really nice, delicate oak, not mm-hmm. too much at all.
Yeah.
I'd liken it to that kind of, like, exquisitely, you know, oaked Chardonnay, which I'm always kind of really fond of.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't, it's not oak forward at all. It's really apple forward.
That's what I like about the neutral barrels or the used barrels.
Mm-hmm. It's so sessionable.
Yes, exactly.
You know, cider is so sessionable, and you're not tasting the alcohol at all.
Right.
You know, it's just so smooth.
Yeah.
Well, that's absolutely lovely.
Yeah, I remember the first cider I made, I didn't know about base cider and blending and doing the whole process, so I just fermented the apples that we found late harvest and served it to friends and didn't realize it was probably 9 or 10% alcohol. You know? People were falling over and mm-hmm. getting funny and...
Learned
my ways from there.
Yeah, they thought it was like wassail time.
Yeah.
Are you going to be doing a wassail time?
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. So we have our indoor wassail, which is at the Poet and the Patriot Irish Pub. So this will be our third year in a row doing it there. And we have Apple City Slew Band and Treetop Tommy and the Flyers, just friends bands that play good music. We serve wassail drink and probably have 3 or 4 kinds of cider.
Do you have the date set for that?
It is. It's January 14th.
January 14th.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
And also we haven't set a date for our orchard wassail, where we will pick, you know, the oldest tree and sing to it and hang toast and pour cider and do the whole thing.
Lovely.
So yeah, we do
lovely.
That every year too.
Yay, yay. This is always like the best time to like celebrate Halloween in and get dressed up.
Yes.
So wassail for Santa Cruz Cider Company should just be fantastic.
Yes, definitely. It's always fun.
Yeah, nice. So you have the barrel aged, and then there is the...
Yeah, barrel fermented.
And so let's talk about barrel fermented versus barrel aged. So the first one we had was just the cider was made ahead of time and then placed into the barrel for 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
This one here is...
was put in the barrel as fresh cider or fresh juice. Also Gravenstein. From a different orchard.
From a different orchard,
mm-hmm.
okay.
Yep.
All right, so this glass that Nicole poured is actually a much deeper yellow, I'm going to say, mm-hmm. if I'm correct.
Yep.
Yeah, and how long has that been in the barrel for?
That one also about 3 months.
Oh, 3 months, I'm sorry.
Yeah, all of them.
So fermented mm-hmm. all the way through for 3 months.
And still on primary. I haven't racked it yet.
Yeah,
so
okay.
Still the primary leaves.
So, yeah, you're smelling that. Is this wild ferment?
Mm-mm.
No?
No, we use champagne yeast for a lot of our stuff.
I'm getting that little bit of acetic, mm-hmm. you know, that Oh, that's why I asked if it was wild, because I got that in the nose, but it's at that level that I really love, so it's not too, like, sour.
Right.
That really nice, like, little acetic that's kind of, like, perks you up and is saying, come on in, put your nose all the way in.
Yes.
Nice, yeah. It's kind of like you're hanging out with, like, the bees a little bit, and you're really outside rolling around the barrel. I love that. Mmm. It has a really nice nose. The nose is really pronounced here. Kind of a little farmy, too. So,
a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, so that's interesting. I'm wondering if the... You said you use, like, a champagne yeast on that?
Let me double check.
Yeah. So Nicole's checking her records here. I may or may not put this in here, but we'll see what we got here.
Champagne yeast.
I'm wondering, so was this put into a 50-gallon barrel, right?
Mm-hmm.
And did you, when you added the yeast, how are you doing that? Like, how soon after are you adding the yeast to something that you're when you're putting the fresh pressed juice into the barrel?
Mm-hmm.
Are you... what's the term for it? When you're expanding the yeast, you're not just, like, putting in your, like, little dry package.
I'm not just doing the dry pack. No, yeah. I do rehydrate and give it yeast nutrient.
Okay.
So once we press in the orchard, this is the fun part of the day, is you get to bring the cider back to the cidery, rack it into a fermenter, and start getting the yeast ready. So there's a good, 2 hours of work after you're done pressing for the day. Because we do pitch the yeast the same day that we press.
You do. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, I'm just kind of curious on this. What were the temperatures when you pitched it for this day? Do you know?
So this was in August, and we are ambient temperature. We don't have any climate control in here. So it usually stays around 60 in here.
That's nice. Yeah, the walls here are cinder block, and it's a cement floor. So even in Santa Cruz, it's going to stay cool. Yeah. 60 degrees is a great temperature.
We measured all the ciders this week, and with the extra kind of cold weather, everything was at 45 degrees.
Right.
So not a whole lot of, mostly everything's done fermenting primary. It's just sitting in their secondary fermenters.
Well, I'm thinking that you had a little dominant yeast in your barrel.
I think so.
That was already there, and the champagne yeast is not a really aggressive yeast, typically.
Right.
And not to mention whatever the natural yeast is there, kind of like did a really nice marriage, I'm going to say, between the orchard and the barrel. You didn't add anything to the juice before you pitched the yeast, right?
Nope.
So I think that's what, they really kind of created their own, like, little mini.
Yeah, and each of our barrels is different, it's come from a different winemaker or...
That's excitement. But it's not over the top, you have just this really... If you didn't tell me that was champagne yeast, I wouldn't know that. Mm-hmm. And it's not dry at all.
No, it has some body and some fruit to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you're right, whatever was in the barrel ahead of time and a little bit of the wild ferment.
Yes, but just enough, like that teardrop of essence that really makes it exciting. And I think that's the excitement of being like a very orchard-based cidery, that and what you're doing with the barrels, that you could take it to this other level, and it kind of creates these vintages.
Yes, exactly. We're thinking about having a vintage cider.
Yeah, really delicious. Nice full mouth all the way through in the oak. Are you leaving this now on for what?
So it's still in the primary. I think it's getting to the point that I'm going to maybe package it soon.
And so if you're going to package this, because you're not going to stop the fermentation necessarily.
Right.
So you would be kegging that, and then it goes out. You're really banking on it, like, being consumed within... What kind of time period?
Actually, as I'm finding out, I really like the ciders as they age, like a year or so, year to two. Some of these Gravenstein barrels, I think, will hang on to it for a year before we release them. And then the other ones just get out there so we can, have some cider flowing and keep the money coming in.
Yeah, yeah. that's the balance there.
It is, yeah. And this is the first year, you know, now that we're in it for a few years, we actually have enough cider to keep things flowing and be aging some things as well. Mm-hmm. So it's really exciting for me as a cider maker, because mm-hmm. before the family is like, make cider, get it out,
yeah.
you know, and now that we have some older stuff and I can taste our 2014 stuff and mm-hmm. realize how much more I like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because cider does, it conditions, and a year from now this is going to probably have a much deeper oak, mm-hmm. I believe. And probably that blend of the yeast there, what's going on, they're still partying.
Mm-hmm.
They're still partying in that bottle
or
that barrel. And they're like, okay, you know, that's kind of the beauty of it. I mean, you could be really like a strict cider maker, but you could also be letting the apple speak for itself.
Yes. That's what I try to do. I'm a very casual fermenter, as I say. You know, I can get lazy and maybe not top off my barrel, and could be a little bit of that, you know, acetic acid in there. But
yeah, well, but that's okay, because you're really holding it. And both these ciders are fantastic, really delicious, and sessionable.
Yes.
Well, I'm going to take that down a notch. So it's 6% is not totally sessionable for me.
Right.
That is a little high, so you know, I'd have to watch out a little bit, or else I'll put on the funny hat and start dancing around the lamppost, which could be fun sometimes. Yeah. Nothing wrong
like
with that.
Like any regular Santa Cruzian.
Yeah. Well, I had my driver's license here.
Yeah.
Cool. So these are waiting, and then I'm looking on the shelf here, and I see all these beautiful labels, and you have a really sweet logo, which is, I'm right up there
California
on the top.
Apple, yeah.
Little California apple. Say more about that.
Well, luckily, my husband, Felix, is an artist. Tattoo artist by trade.
Wow.
And he's kind of more of a cider maker now, taking a break from tattooing, but he will draw, you know, doodle for us, and we'll say, okay, develop that idea, but he just kind of comes up with the art. The California apple was his idea, and we decided to run with that with our logo, and so you see lots of different versions of it as we're still kind of developing the logo.
Mm. When you say California apple, what do you mean by that?
We have just kind of, the initial one didn't have the state cut in it, and it just had the coastline of California.
Oh, I see. I didn't see that. Oh, my goodness.
And the little San Juan Islands looks like a bite mark out of the apple.
Yeah.
So then we kind of decided to outline the state and make it more obvious that it's a California apple.
Mm, okay. So just for Ciderville to know, so this is the shape of an apple, is an apple, and it has a leaf and a stem, a leaf going off to the left and the stem to the right on the top. And then on the left side is the outline of the state of California, and it has a red star on it, right? Most of them have, it's a red
mm-hmm.
star.
Yep.
And what is the star? Just
that Santa Cruz, that's where we are and where our cider is coming from. And
okay.
Grown.
I see. Okay. So yeah, the star is right where Monterey Bay and, mm-hmm. and Santa Cruz is, right below. And for folks who don't know where Santa Cruz is, it's about 75 miles south of San Francisco, and it's on the top northern end of Monterey Bay, and to the south is Monterey.
Mm-hmm.
And then south of there is Big Sur. Oh, that's very, very clever. I knew when I saw it, I felt like I didn't see the state of California. I just felt like it was an open apple kind of pouring out the brightness with the star.
Yeah.
Now that I see it, it like really opens up. It's like I guess I wasn't looking at it, you know, in that way. Very, very fun.
I would like to thank Nicole and Felix Todd for hosting me on that lovely day in Santa Cruz just a week ago. I have such great faith in Ciderville when I meet these type of cider makers. As we went through that vertical tasting of the 2-3-month-old barrel-aged ciders, you heard a bit of the changes that can take place. And though Nicole does not have any professional, quote-unquote, training to be a cider maker, her enthusiasm is indeed carrying her through. And you could taste the vitality and terroir of those forgotten orchards that they first went scrumping in and now can freely pick from in each sip. Part of the ingenuity behind this cidery is that they are not in debt. So as they go along, they pay as they go. Thus, it lends itself to this experimentation and growth with the forgotten orchard that is now being revived and also their own cider skills. And I think that speaks volumes for what is happening in the cider realm. You could have folks who go in a full blast with a lot of monetary support, or you have folks like Nicole and Natalie and their families that are involved bringing up cider in that style that California hasn't seen since Robert Mondavi. I know I'll be watching this cidery in years to come, and I recommend that you do too. And to top it off, to make that cup even fuller, don't you know that it's Santa Cruz Cider Company, even at their small beginnings, and even though they're not paying themselves, they donated to Cider Chat and became part of the Cider Going Up campaign, which really showcases their business savvy and understanding that now is not the time to just think local cider, but world cider, and continue to help promote cider around the world. Big tip of the glass to Santa Cruz Cider Company and the following cideries who have joined the Cider Chat Going Up campaign. With Current Cider in Perkasie, Pennsylvania, Big Apple Hard Cider in New York City, and Oliver's Cider and Perry in Herefordshire in the UK. Tip of the glass to them and all the patrons of Cider Chat. If you'd like to join the Cider Going Up campaign or become a patron of Cider Chat, whether you are a commercial or non-commercial cidery, please go to the Cider Chat Patreon page. There'll be a link to that in the show notes for this episode, number 60. Well, Ciderville, it's almost a new year, 2017, and I'm ready to roll out of here. I'm thinking about a little mini chat for next week, perhaps the Musée Poiré in France, as we start rolling out some of the fine chats that I had while in Asturias. In the meantime, I hope that your cup is filled with holiday cheer and the best that cider brings. This is Rio in Color, signing off for now. I look forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
You know, so we're kind of testing out different flavors at the spots, and the ones that are more popular we'll move forward with making big batches of.
Well, that's the beauty of the cider market kind of going off the coattails of the craft brewers, is that you have this educated palate.
Trying different kinds of hops, you know. Yeah. One of them wasn't a whole lot of hop flavor. It was more mango flavor. So then we just added some mango and made it a mango hop, and it was really popular, too.
You know what I also really liked about seeing your Facebook page and stuff is that you're using the ball jars. Yeah, you know, I just like that, you know, the tasting. It's just really, it just kind of lent it to that kind of organic and friendly.